Maybe I was a little too optimistic.
Serini stood outside the doors to Aedon's study. A pair of guards stood a short distance away, watching her suspiciously.
Do you know what you're going to do, my lady?
The Seon had spent the meeting floating just outside the chapel walls, well within his range of hearing, making certain that no one else was eavesdropping on their meeting. Serini shook her head. She had displayed bravado when confronted by Ahane and the others, but she realized how misplaced that sentiment had been. She had no idea how she was going to get Aedon to let her into Elantris, let alone get him to accept their help.
Did you speak with Father?
I did, my lady. He said he would give you whatever financial help you required.
All right. Let's go.
Serini strode toward the soldiers.
I would speak with my father.
The guards glanced at each other.
We were told not to...
That doesn't apply to family, soldier. If the queen came to speak with her husband, would you turn her away?
The guards frowned in confusion. Ishane probably didn't come to visit. Serini had noticed the bubbly queen tended to keep her distance from Aedon. Even silly women resented being described that way to their faces.
Just open the door, soldier. If the king doesn't want to talk to me, he'll throw me out, and next time you will know not to let me in.
The guards hesitated, and Serini simply pushed her way between them and opened the door herself.
But wait!
Aedon looked up from his desk, a pair of spectacles she had never seen him wear before balanced on the end of his nose. He quickly pulled them off and stood, slamming his hands against the desktop in annoyance.
You aren't content to annoy me in public, so you have to follow me to my study as well? If I'd known what a foolish, spindly girl you were, I would never have signed that treaty. Be gone, woman, and leave me to work.
I tell you what, Father. I'll pretend to be an intelligent human being capable of a semi-lucid conversation, and you pretend the same thing.
You tricked me, woman. I could have you beheaded for making me look the fool.
Start decapitating your children, Father, and people will begin to ask questions.
She watched his reaction carefully, hoping to glean something about Rayodin's disappearance, but she was disappointed. Aedon brushed off the comment with only passing attention.
I should ship you back to Eventeo right now.
Fine. I'd be happy to go. However, realize that if I go, you lose your trade treaty with Teod. That could be a problem, considering the luck you've had peddling your silks in Fjordan lately.
Aedon gritted his teeth at the comment.
I can give you a way out, Father. I have come to offer you a deal.
What reason do I have to accept any offers from you, woman? You have been here nearly a month, and now I find that you have been deceiving me the whole time.
You will trust me, Father, because you have lost 75% of your fleet to pirates. In a few short months, you could lose your throne unless you listen to me.
How do you know these things?
Everyone knows, Father. It's all over the court. They expect you to fall at the next taxing period.
I knew it! Those snakes. They just stood biding their time, waiting to strike. Vile, disgusting ragdoll, my... You propose a deal?
I do. Silk is going for a premium in Teod right now, Father. One could make quite a profit selling it to the king. And considering certain familial relationships, you might be able to talk Eventeo into giving you sole mercantile rights in his country.
Aedon grew suspicious, his rage cooling as he sensed a bargain. However, the merchant in him immediately began to sniff for problems. Serini gritted her teeth in frustration. It was as the others had told her. Aedon would never accept her offer. It stank too much of deceit.
An interesting proposal, but I'm afraid that I
would, of course, require something in return. Call it a fee for setting up the deal between Eventeo and yourself.
What kind of fee are we talking about?
I want to go inside Elantris.
What?
I have to perform a widow's trial. So, I'm going to bring food to the Elantrians.
What possible motivation could you have for doing that, woman?
Religious reasons, Father. Shu Korath teaches us to help those most lowly. And I challenge you to find anyone more lowly than the Elantrians.
It's out of the question. Entry into Elantris is forbidden by law.
A law you made, Father, and therefore you can make exceptions. Think carefully. Your fortune and your throne could balance on your answer.
You want to enter Elantris with food? For how long?
Until I'm convinced my duty as Prince Raodin's wife has been fulfilled.
You would go alone?
I would take any who were willing to accompany me.
You'll have trouble finding anyone to fill that requirement.
My problem, not yours.
First that Fjordel devil starts whipping my people into mobs. Now you would do the same.
No, Father. I want quite the opposite. Chaos would only benefit Wern. Believe as you wish, but it is my sole concern to see stability in Aerilon.
No more than 10 at a time, excluding guards. I don't want mass pilgrimages going into Elantris. You will enter an hour before noon, and you will be gone by an hour after noon. No exceptions.
Done. You may use my Saeon to call King Evanteo to work out the details of the deal.
I must admit, my lady, that was rather clever.
Aishi bobbed along beside Serini in the hallway on the way to her room. Serini had stayed as Aedon spoke with Evanteo, mediating as the two worked out the deal. Her father's voice had contained a hearty measure of, "I hope you know what you're doing, Eni," in it. Evanteo was a kind and good king, but he was an absolutely horrible businessman. He kept a fleet of accountants to manage the royal finances. Once Aedon had sensed her father's inability, he struck with the enthusiasm of a raging predator. And only Serini's presence had kept Aedon from leaking away Teod's entire tax revenue in a rampage of trading fervor. As it was, Aedon had managed to talk them into buying his silks for 4 times as much as they were worth. The king had been beaming so widely as Serini left that he almost appeared to have forgiven her for her charade.
Clever? Me?
Is there anyone you can't manipulate, my lady?
Father, you know he gets the better of me 3 times out of 5.
He says the same thing about you, my lady.
It really wasn't that clever, Aishi. We should have realized that our problems were really solutions to one another. One, an offer with no catch. The other, a request with no sweetener.
Aishi floated around the room.
This will not do.
What?
Serini was unwrapping the black ribbon tied around her upper arm, the only remaining sign of her mourning.
The room has not been cleaned again, my lady.
It's not like I left it that messy in the first place.
No, your highness is a very tidy woman. However, the palace maids have been lax in their duties. A princess deserves proper esteem. If you allow them to neglect their work, it won't be long before they stop respecting you.
I think you're reading too much into it, Aishi.
Serini pulled off her dress and prepared her nightgown.
I'm supposed to be the suspicious one, remember?
This is a matter of servants, not lords, my lady. You are a brilliant woman and a fine politician, but you betray a common weakness of your class. You ignore the opinions of servants.
Aishi, I always treated my father's servants with respect and kindness.
Perhaps I should rephrase, my lady. Yes, you lack unkind prejudices. However, you don't pay attention to what the servants think of you. Not in the same way you are always aware of what the aristocracy thinks.
I've always tried to be fair.
Yes, my lady, but you are a child of nobility, raised to ignore those who work around you. I only suggest you remember that if the maids disrespect you, it could be as detrimental as if the lords do so.
All right, point taken. Fetch Miela for me. I'll ask her if she knows what happened.
Yes, my lady.
Aishi floated toward the window.
Aishi, the people loved Raoden, didn't they?
Oh, by all accounts, my lady. He was known for paying very personal heed to their opinions and needs.
He was a better prince than I am a princess, wasn't he?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, my lady. You are a very kind-hearted woman, and you always treat your maids well. Do not compare yourself to Raoden. It is important to remember that you weren't preparing to run a country, and your popularity with people isn't an issue. Prince Raoden was the heir to the throne, and it was vital that he understand his subjects' feelings.
They say he gave the people hope, that the peasants endured Aedon's outrageous burdens because they knew Raoden would eventually take the throne. The country would have collapsed years ago if the prince hadn't gone amongst them, encouraging them and reviving their spirits.
And now he is gone?
Yes, he's gone. We have to hurry, Aishi. I keep feeling that I'm not doing any good, that the country is heading for disaster no matter what I do. It's like I'm at the bottom of a hill watching an enormous boulder crash down toward me and I'm throwing pebbles up to try and deflect it.
Be strong, my lady. Your guard will not sit and watch as Aerilon and Teod crumble beneath Wern's heel.
I hope the prince is watching as well. Would he be proud of me, Eishi?
Very proud, my lady.
I just want them to accept me.
Serini realized how silly she must sound. She had spent nearly 3 decades loving a country without ever feeling it loved her back. Teod had respected her, but she was tired of respect. She wanted something different from Eirilan.
They will, Serini. Give them time. They will.
Thank you, Eishi. Thank you for enduring the lamentations of a silly girl.
We can be strong in the face of kings and priests, my lady. But to live is to have worries and uncertainties. Keep them inside and they will destroy you for certain, leaving behind a person so calloused that emotion can find no root in his heart.
With that, the Seon passed out the window in search of the maid, Miaela. By the time Miaela arrived, Serini had composed herself. There had been no tears, just time spent in thought. Sometimes it was too much for her, and her insecurity simply had to boil out. Eishi and her father had always been there to support her during those times.
Oh dear.
Miaela was thin and rather young, definitely not what Serini expected when she had first moved into the palace. Miaela more resembled one of her father's accountants than she did a head maid.
I'm sorry, my lady, I didn't even think of this. We lost another girl this afternoon, and it didn't occur to me that your room was on her list of duties.
Lost, Miaela?
A runaway, my lady. They aren't supposed to leave. We're indentured like the rest of the peasants. For some reason, we have trouble keeping maids in the palace, however. Domai knows why it is. No servant in the country is treated better than those here.
How many have you lost?
This was the 4th this year. I'll send someone up immediately.
No, don't bother tonight. Just make sure it doesn't happen again.
Of course, my lady.
Thank you. There it is again!
Serini jumped out of her bed. Eishi instantly burst back to full illumination, hovering uncertainly by the wall.
My lady!
Quiet!
Serini pressed her ear against the stone wall beneath her window.
What do you think?
I am thinking that whatever my lady had for supper, it isn't agreeing with her.
There was definitely a noise in there.
Though Eishi was always awake in the mornings when she got up, he didn't like being disturbed after he had fallen asleep. She reached over to her nightstand and picked up a scrap of parchment. On it, she made a mark with a thin piece of charcoal, not wanting to bother with pen and ink.
Look!
She held up the paper for Eishi to see.
The sounds always come on the same days of the week, Maedal and Opidal.
Eishi floated over and looked at the paper, his glowing aeon, the only room's illumination besides starlight.
You've heard it twice on Maedal and twice on Opidal, 4 times in total. There's hardly grounds for a decision that they always come on the same days, my lady.
Oh, you think I'm hearing things anyway?
She dropped the parchment back onto her table.
I thought seance was supposed to have excellent auditory senses.
Not when we're sleeping, my lady.
There must be a passage here.
Serini tapped the stone wall.
If you say so, my lady.
I do.
She rose and studied her window.
Look how thick the stone is around this window, Eishi.
Serini leaned against the wall and stuck her arm out the window. The tips of her fingers could barely curl around the outside ledge.
Does the wall really need to be so wide?
It offers much protection, my lady.
It also offers room for a passage.
A very thin one.
True.
Serini knelt down to view the bottom edge of the window at eye level.
It slopes upwards. The passage was constructed to angle up, passing between the bottoms of the windows on this level and the first story.
But the only thing in that direction is...
The king's rooms. Where else would a passage lead?
Are you suggesting that the king takes secret excursions twice a week in the middle of the night, my lady?
At precisely 11 o'clock.
Serini eyed the large grandfather clock in the corner of her room.
It's always the same time.
What possible reason could he have to do such a thing?
I don't know.
Oh dear, my lady is concocting something, isn't she?
Always.
Serini climbed back into bed.
Turn down your light. Some of us want to get some sleep.
Braithen sat down in his chair, wearing a red Dorethi robe instead of his armor, as he often did when he was in his chambers.
Coming.
Arteth Therid entered. A man of good Fjordal stock, Therid had a strong, tall frame, dark hair, and squarish features. He was still well-muscled from his day's training in the monastery.
Your grace.
The man bowed and fell to his knees with a proper sign of respect.
Arteth, during my time here, I've been watching the local priests. I have been impressed with your service in Yardet's kingdom, and I have decided to offer you the position of head Arteth of this chapel.
Therid looked up with surprise.
Your grace?
I had thought that I would have to wait to appoint a new head Arteth until a new batch of priests arrived from Fjordan. But, as I said, you have impressed me. I decided to offer you the position.
My lord, I cannot accept this position.
What?
No Dorethi priest would refuse a position of such power.
I'm sorry, my lord.
What reason have you for this decision, Arteth?
I can give you none, your grace. It just wouldn't be right for me to take the position. May I withdraw?
Hraithen waved his hand, disturbed. Ambition was such a cardinal Fjordal attribute. How had a man such as Therid lost his pride so quickly? Had Fionn really weakened the priests in K'e so soundly? Or was something else behind this man's refusal? A nagging voice inside of Hraithen whispered that the banished Fionn was not to blame. Diloth had something to do with Therid's refusal. The thought was probably just paranoia, but it spurred Hraithen forward with his next item of business. Diloth had to be dealt with. Despite his stunt with the Elantrian, the Arteth was growing increasingly influential with the other priests. Hraithen reached into a desk drawer, pulling out a small envelope. He had made a mistake with Diloth. While it was possible to channel the zealot's ardor, Hraithen currently had neither the time nor the energy to do so. The future of an entire kingdom depended on Hraithen's ability to focus, and he hadn't realized how much attention Diloth would require. It could not continue. Hraithen's world was one of control and predictability, his religion a logical exercise. Diloth was like a boiling pot of water poured on Hraithen's ice. In the end, they would both just end up weakened and dissipated, like puffs of steam in the wind. And after they were gone, Eirilon would die. Hraithen put on his armor and left his room, entering the chapel. Several supplicants knelt in prayerful silence, and priests moved about busily. The chapel's vaulted ceilings and spirited architecture was familiar. This was where he should be most comfortable. Too often, however, Hraithen found himself fleeing up to the walls of Elantris, though he told himself that he simply went to the walls because their height gave him a vantage over K'e. He knew that there was another reason. He went in part because he knew that Elantris was a place that Diloth would never voluntarily go. Diloth's chamber was a small alcove, much like the one Hraithen himself had occupied as an Arteth many years ago. Diloth looked up from his desk as Hraithen pushed open the room's simple wooden door.
My Hroden?
Hraithen rarely visited his chambers.
I have an important task for you, Arteth. One I cannot trust to anyone else.
Of course, my Hroden.
Diloth bowed his head. However, his eyes narrowed with suspicion.
I serve with devotion, knowing I am part of the chain linked to Lord Yardeth himself.
Yes, yes, Arteth. I need you to deliver a letter.
A letter?
Yes. It is vital Wyrm knows of our progress here. I have written him a report, but the matters discussed therein are very delicate. If it should be lost, irreparable damage could be done. I have chosen you, my Odive, to deliver it in person.
That will take weeks, my Hroden.
I know. I will have to go without your service for a time, but I will be comforted by the knowledge that you are engaged in a vital mission.
Diloth lowered his eyes, his hands falling to rest lightly on the top of his table.
I go as my Hroden commands.
Hraithen paused, frowning slightly. It was impossible for Diloth to escape. The Hroden-Odive relationship was irrevocably binding. When one's master commanded, one obeyed. Even so, Hraithen had expected more from Diloth. A ploy of some kind, an attempt to wiggle out of the assignment. Diloth accepted the letter with apparent subservience. Maybe this was what he wanted all along, Raythan realized. A way into Fjordan. His position as Odive to Agjorn would give him power and respect in the East. Perhaps Diloph's only purpose in antagonizing Raythan had been to get out of Aerilon. Raythan turned and walked back out into the chapel's hollow sermon hall. The event had been even more painless than he had hoped. He held back a sigh of relief, stepping with a bit more confidence as he walked toward his chambers.
Send out messengers! We leave for Fjordan in the morning!
Raythan nearly kept walking. He almost didn't care what Diloph was planning, or what he did, as long as he left. However, Raythan had spent too long in positions of leadership, too long as a political being to let such a statement pass. Especially from Diloph.
We? I ordered only you, Arthas.
Yes, my lord. However, surely you don't expect me to leave my Odives behind.
Odives?
As an official member of the Dorethi priesthood, Diloph was able to swear Odives just as Raythan had, continuing the chain that linked all men to Yaudeth. Raythan hadn't even considered, however, that the man might call Odives of his own. When had he found the time?
Who, Diloph? Whom did you make your Odive?
Several people, my Hrod.
Names, Arthith.
Diloph began to name them. Most priests called one or two Odives. Several of the Giorns had as many as 10. Diloph had over 30. Raythan grew increasingly stunned as he listened. Stunned and angry. Somehow, Diloph made Odives out of all Raythan's most useful supporters, including Weyreen and many of the other aristocrats. Diloph finished his list, turning traitorously humble eyes toward the floor.
An interesting list. And who do you intend to take with you, Arthith?
Why, all of them, my lord. If this letter is as important as my lord implies, then I must give it proper protection.
Raythan closed his eyes. If Diloph took all of the people he had mentioned, then it would leave Raythan stripped of supporters, assuming that was they would go. The calling of Odive was very demanding. Most normal Dorethi believers, even many priests, were sworn to the less restrictive position of Crondet. A Crondet listened to the counsel of his Hrodin, but was not morally bound to do what he was told. It was well within Diloph's power to make his Odives accompany him to Fjordan. Raythan could have no control over what the Arteth did with his sworn followers. It would be a grave breach of protocol to order Diloph to leave them behind. However, if Diloph did try to take them, it would undoubtedly be a disaster. These men were new to Shu Dareth. They didn't know how much power they had given Diloph. If the Arteth tried to drag them to Fjordan, it was unlikely they would follow. And if that happened, Raythan would be forced to excommunicate every single one of them. Shu Dareth would be ruined in Aerilon. Diloph continued his preparations as if he didn't notice Raythan's internal battle. Not that this was much of a conflict. Raythan knew what he had to do. Diloph was unstable. It was possible that he was bluffing, but equally likely that he would destroy Raythan's efforts in spiteful retribution. Raythan gritted his teeth until his jaw throbbed. Raythan might have stopped Diloph's attempt to burn the Elantrian, but the Arteth had obviously realized what Raythan's next move would be. No, Diloph didn't want to go to Fjordan. He might have been unstable, but he was also much better prepared than Raythan had assumed. Raythan ordered as Diloph's messenger turned to leave. If that man left the chapel, all would be ruined.
Arthith, I have changed my mind.
My Hrodin?
You will not go to Fjordan, Diloph.
But my lord...
No, I cannot do without you. Find someone else to deliver the message.
With that, Raythan spun and stalked toward his chambers.
I am, as always, my Hrodin's humble servant.
Raythan fled again. He needed to think, to clear his mind. He had spent several hours stewing in his office, angry at both Diloph and himself. Finally, he could stand it no longer, and so he absconded to the night streets of Kaye. As usual, he directed his path toward Elantris's wall. He sought height as if rising above the dwellings of man could give him a better perspective on life.
Spare some coin, sir.
Raythan stopped in surprise. He had been so distracted that he hadn't noticed the rag-clothed beggar at his feet. The man was old and obviously had poor sight, for he was squinting up at Raythan in the darkness. Raythan frowned, realizing for the first time that he had never seen a beggar in K.E. A youth, dressed in clothing no better than that of the old man, hobbled around the corner. The boy froze, blanching pale white.
Not him, you old fool! I'm sorry, my lord. My father loses his wits sometimes and thinks he is a beggar. Please forgive us!
The boy moved to grab the old man's arm. Raythan held up his hand commandingly, and the youth stopped, growing another shade paler. Raythan knelt down beside the elderly man, who was smiling with a half-senile daze.
Tell me, old man, why do I see so few beggars in the city?
The king forbids begging in his city, good sir. It is a poor sign of prosperity to have us on his streets. If he finds us, he sends us back to the farms.
You say too much!
The youth's frightened face indicated that he was very close to abandoning the old man and bolting away.
Yes, good sir. We mustn't let him catch us.
Hide outside the city, we do.
Outside the city?
K.E. isn't the only town here, you know. There used to be four of them, all surrounding Elantris. But the others dried up. Not enough food for so many people in such a small area, they said. We hide in the ruins.
Are there many of you?
No, not many. Only those who have the nerve to run away from the farms. I wasn't always a beggar, good sir. I used to work in Elantris. I was a carpenter, one of the best. I didn't make a very good farmer, though. The king was wrong there, good sir. He sent me to the fields, but I was too old to work in them. So I ran away, came here. The merchants in the town, they give us money sometimes, for we can only beg after night comes. And never from the high nobles. No, sir, they would tell the king.
The old man squinted up at Raythan, as if realizing for the first time why the boy was so apprehensive.
You don't look much like a merchant, good sir.
I'm not.
Raythan dropped a bag of coins in the man's hand.
That is for you.
Then he dropped a second bag beside the first.
That is for the others. Good night, old man.
Oh, thank you, good sir.
Thank Yadith.
Who is Yadith, good sir?
You will know soon enough, old man. One way or another, you will know.
The breeze was gusty and strong atop the wall of Elantris, and it whipped at Raythan's cape with glee. It was a cool ocean wind, bearing the briny scent of salt water and sea life. Raythan stood between two burning torches, leaning against the low parapet and looking out over K.E. The city wasn't very large, not when compared with the sheer mass of Elantris, but it could have been far better fortified. He felt his old dissatisfaction returning. He hated being in a place that couldn't protect itself. Perhaps that was part of the stress he was feeling with this assignment. Lights sparked throughout K.E., most of them street lamps, including a series that ran along the short wall that marked the formal border of the city. The wall ran in a perfect circle, so perfect, in fact, that Raythan would have remarked upon it had he been in any other city. Here, it was just another remnant of fallen Elantris's glory. K.E. had spilled out beyond that inner wall, but the old border remained, a ring of flame running around the center of the city.
It was so much nicer once.
Raythan turned with surprise. Raythan found a short, bald Aureline in a simple gray robe. Omine, head of the Karathi religion in K.E. Omine approached the edge, pausing beside Raythan and studying the city.
Of course, that was back then, when the Elantrians still ruled. The city's fall was probably good for our souls. Still, I can't help recalling those days with awe. Do you realize that no one in all of Aerilan went without food? The Elantrians could turn stone into corn and dirt into steak. Confronted by those memories, I am left wondering, could devils do that much good in this world? Would they even want to?
Prathan didn't respond. He simply stood, leaning with his arms crossed on top of the parapet, the wind churning his hair.
How did you find me?
It is well known that you spend your nights up here.
Omine could barely rest his arms on the parapet. Prathan considered Delof short, but this man made the Artet look like a giant.
Your supporters say you come here and plan how to defeat the vile Elantrians. And your opponents say you come here because you feel guilty for condemning a people who have already been cursed.
Prathan turned, looking down into the little man's eyes.
And what do you say?
I say nothing. It doesn't matter to me why you climb these stairs, Prathan. I do, however, wonder why you preach hatred of the Elantrians when you yourself simply pity them.
It's not so hard, once you accustom yourself to it. A man can force himself to hate if he wishes, especially if he convinces himself that it is for a higher good.
The oppression of the few brings salvation to the many.
You'd best not mock, Arelen. You have few options, and we both know the least painful one will require you to do as I do.
To profess hatred where I have none. I will never do that, Prathan.
Then you will become irrelevant.
Is that the way it must be, then?
Shu-Korath is docile and unassuming priest. Shu-Dareth is vibrant and dynamic. It will sweep you away like a roaring flood rushing through a stagnant pool.
You act as if truth was something to be influenced by persistence, Prathan.
I am not speaking of truth or falsehood. I am simply referring to physical inevitability. You cannot stand against Fjordan. And where Fjordan rules, Shu-Dareth teaches.
One cannot separate truth from actions, Prathan. Physically inevitable or not, truth stands above all things. It is independent of who has the best army, who can deliver the longest sermons, or even who has the most priests. It can be pushed down, but it will always surface. Truth is the one thing you can never intimidate.
And if Shu-Dareth is the truth?
Then it will prevail. But I didn't come to argue with you.
Oh?
No. I came to ask you a question.
Then ask, priest, and leave me to my thoughts.
I want to know, what happened? What happened, Prathan? What happened to your faith?
My faith?
Yes. You must have believed at one point. Otherwise, you wouldn't have pursued the priesthood long enough to become a Gyorn. You lost it somewhere, though. I have listened to your sermons. I hear logic and complete understanding, not to mention determination. I just don't hear any faith, and I wonder what happened to it.
Go.
Prathan didn't bother to look down at the priest. Omine didn't answer, and Prathan turned. The Aerilish man was already gone, strolling down the wall with a casual step, as if he had forgotten Prathan were there. Prathan stood on the wall for a long time that night. Raoden inched forward, slowly peeking around the corner. He should have been sweating. In fact, he kept reaching up to wipe his brow, though the motion did nothing but spread black Elantris grime across his forehead. His knees trembled slightly as he huddled against the decaying wooden fence, anxiously searching the cross street for danger.
Sul, behind you!
Raoden turned with surprise at Galadon's warning, sliding on the slimy cobblestones. Raoden felt something whoosh through the air above him. The leaping madman missed and smashed through the fence. Raoden stumbled to his feet. The madman moved far more quickly. Bald and nearly naked, the man ripped his way through the rest of the fence. Galadon's board smacked the man directly in the face. Then, while the man was stunned, Galadon grabbed a cobblestone. The madman collapsed and did not rise. Galadon straightened.
They're getting stronger somehow, Sul. They seem almost oblivious to pain, Golo.
Riordan nodded, calming his nerves.
They haven't been able to capture a newcomer in weeks. They're getting desperate, falling more and more into their bestial state. I've heard of warriors who grow so enraged during combat that they ignore even mortal wounds.
Riordan paused as Galadon poked at the attacker's body with a stick to make sure he wasn't feigning.
Maybe they've found the final secret to stopping the pain.
All they have to do is surrender their humanity.
The men continued to sneak through what had been the Elantris market. They passed piles of rusted metal and crushed ceramics etched with aeons. Once these scraps had produced wondrous effects, their powerful magics demanding unparalleled prices, now they were little more than obstacles for Riordan to avoid, lest they crunch noisily beneath his feet.
We should have brought Seolin.
Riordan shook his head.
Seolin is a wonderful soldier and a good man, but he's completely lacking in stealth. Even I can hear him approaching. Besides, he would have insisted on bringing a group of his guards. He refuses to believe I can protect myself.
Galadon glanced at the fallen madman, then back at Riordan with sardonic eyes.
Whatever you say, Zul.
All right, he might have been useful. However, his men would have insisted on pampering me. Honestly, I thought I'd left that sort of thing behind in my father's palace.
Men protect things they find important. If you object, you shouldn't have made yourself so irreplaceable, Golo.
Point taken. Come on.
They fell quiet as they continued their infiltration. Galadon had protested for hours when Riordan had expressed his plan to sneak in and confront Sheor. The Dula had called it foolhardy, pointless, dangerous, and just plain stupid. He hadn't, however, been willing to let Riordan go alone. Riordan knew the plan probably was foolhardy, pointless, and all the other things Galadon said. Sheor's men would rip them apart without a second thought, probably without even a first thought, considering their mental state. However, during the last week, Sheor's men had tried to capture the garden three more times. Seolin's guards were collecting more and more wounds, while Sheor's men seemed to be getting even more feral and wild. Riordan shook his head. While his troop was growing, most of his followers were physically weak. Sheor's men, however, were frighteningly strong, and every one of them was a warrior. Their rage gave them strength, and Riordan's followers couldn't stand against them for much longer. Riordan had to find Sheor. If only he could speak with the man, he was sure they could find a compromise. It was said that Sheor himself never went on the raids. Everyone referred to the band as Sheor's men, but no one could ever remember seeing Sheor himself. It was entirely possible that he was just another maniac, indistinguishable from the rest. It was also possible that the man Sheor had joined the Hoeed long ago, and the group continued without leadership. Still, something told him that Sheor was alive. Or perhaps Riordan simply wanted to believe so. He needed an adversary he could face. The madmen were too scattered to be efficiently defeated, and they outnumbered Riordan's soldiers by a significant number. Unless Sheor existed, unless Sheor could be swayed, and unless Sheor could control his men, Riordan's band was in serious trouble.
We're close now.
The men approached one final street. There was movement to one side, and they waited apprehensively until it appeared to have passed on.
The bank!
Galadon nodded to a large structure across the street. It was large and boxy, its walls dark beyond what even the slime normally produced.
The Elantrians maintained the place for the local merchants to keep their wealth. A bank inside Elantris was seen as far more secure than one in Kei.
Riordan nodded. Some merchants, like his father, hadn't trusted the Elantrians. Their insistence on storing their fortunes outside of the city had eventually proven wise.
You think Sheor's in there?
Galadon shrugged.
If I were going to choose a base, this would be it. Large, defensible, imposing. Perfect for a warlord.
Let's go then.
The bank was definitely occupied. The slime around the front door was scuffed by the frequent passing of feet, and they could hear voices coming from the back of the structure. Galadon looked at Riordan inquiringly, and Riordan nodded. They went in. The inside was as drab as the outside, dull and stale, even for fallen Elantris. The vault door, a large circle etched with a thick Aeon Edo, was open, and the voices came from inside. Raoden was ready to confront the last of the gang leaders.
Bring me food!
Raoden froze. He craned his neck to the side, peeking into the vault, then recoiled with surprise.
What?
At the back of the chamber, sitting on a pile of what appeared to be gold bars, was a young girl in a pristine, unsoiled pink dress. She had long, aeonic blonde hair, but her skin was black and gray, like that of any other Elantrian. 8 men in ragged clothing knelt before her, their arms spread out in adoration.
Bring me food!
Well, behead me and see me in Dorlogan. What is that?
Sheor.
Then his eyes refocused, and he realized that the girl was staring at him.
Help me!
Stormite!
Raoden and Galadon spun around and dashed toward the door.
If you weren't dead already, Sul, I'd kill you.
Raoden nodded, leaning tiredly against a wall. He was getting weaker. Galadon had warned him it would happen, and Elantrian's muscles atrophied the most near the end of his first month. Exercise couldn't stop it, even though the mind still worked and the flesh did not decay. The body was convinced that it was dead. The old tricks worked the best. They had eventually lost Sheor's men by climbing up the side of a broken wall and hiding on a rooftop. The madmen might act like hounds, but they certainly hadn't acquired a dog's sense of smell. They had passed by Raoden and Galadon's hiding place a half dozen times and never thought to look up. The men were passionate, but they weren't very intelligent.
Sheor is a little girl.
I don't understand either, Sul.
Oh, I understand it. I just can't believe it. Didn't you see them kneeling before her? That girl, Sheor, is their god, a living idol. They've regressed to a more primitive way of life and have adopted a primitive religion as well.
Be careful, Sul. Many people called Yeska a primitive religion.
All right.
Raoden gestured that they should begin moving again.
Perhaps I should have said simplistic. They found something extraordinary, a child with long golden hair, and decided that it should be worshipped. They placed it on an altar, and it makes demands of them. The girl wants food, so they get it for her. Then, ostensibly, she blesses them.
What about that hair?
It's a wig. I recognized her. She was the daughter of one of the most wealthy dukes in Aerilon. She never grew hair. So her father had a wig made for her. I guess the priest didn't think to take it off before throwing her in here.
When was she taken by the Sheod?
Over 2 years ago. Her father, Duke Telrai, tried to keep the matter quiet. He always claimed she had died of Dionia. But there were a lot of rumors.
Apparently all true.
Apparently. I can't even recall her name. It was based on Aeon Soai. Soine, or something like that. I only remember that she was the most spoiled, insufferable child I'd ever met.
Probably makes a perfect goddess, then.
Well, you were right about one thing. Speaking with Sheor isn't going to work. She was unreasonable on the outside. She's probably 10 times worse now. All she knows is that she's very hungry, and those men bring her food.
Good evening, my lord.
The sentry approached them as they rounded a corner and approached their section of Elantris. Or New Elantris, as the people were starting to call it. The sentry, a stout, younger man named Dione, stood up tall as Raoden approached, a makeshift spear held firmly at his side.
Captain Saolin was quite disturbed by your disappearance.
I'll be sure to apologize, Dione.
Raoden and Galadon pulled out their shoes and placed them along the wall next to several other dirty pairs, then put on the clean ones they had left behind. Also present was a bucket of water, which they used to wash off as much of the slime as they could manage. Their clothing was still dirty, but there was nothing else they could do. Cloth was rare, despite the numerous scavenging parties Raoden had organized. It was amazing how much they found. True, most of it was rusted or rotting, but Elantris was enormous. With a little organization and some motivation, they had discovered a great number of useful items, from metal spearheads to furniture that could still hold weight. With Saolin's help, Raoden had sectioned off a marginally defensible section of town to be New Elantris. Only 11 streets led into the area, and there was even a small wall, the original purpose of which baffled them, running along about half of the perimeter. Raoden had placed sentries at the tip of every road to watch for approaching marauders. The system kept them from being overwhelmed. Fortunately, Shaeor's men tended to attack in small bands. As long as Raoden's guards could get enough warning, they could gather and defeat any one group. If Shaeor ever organized a larger, multi-directional assault, however, the result would be disastrous. Raoden's band of women, children, and weakened men just couldn't stand against the feral creatures. Saolin had begun teaching simple combat techniques to those capable, but he could use only the safest and most elementary training methods, lest the combatants' sparring wounds prove more dangerous than Shaeor's attacks. The people, however, never expected the fighting to go that far. Raoden began to feel sick as they walked toward the chapel, the mounting pains of his several dozen bruises and scrapes suddenly pressing against him with suffocating pressure. It was as if his body were encased in a blazing fire, his flesh, bones, and soul being consumed in the heat.
I failed them.
We can't always get what we want on the first try, Golo. You'll find a way. I would never have thought you'd get this far.
I was lucky. A lucky fool.
Sul, are you all right?
I'm fine.
I've never seen you look like this, Sul.
Raoden shook his head, leaning up against the stone wall of a nearby building.
I'll be all right. I was just wondering what we're going to do about Shaeor. We can't reason with her, and we can't defeat her men by force.
You'll think of something.
Raoden pushed away from the wall, the stone crumbling beneath his fingers. He turned around and looked at the wall with surprise. Kaher had recently cleaned it, and its white marble glistened in the sun, except where Raoden's fingers had crushed it.
Stronger than you thought?
Raoden raised his eyebrows, brushing at the broken stone. It crumbled away.
This stone is as soft as pumice.
Elantris, things decay quickly here.
Yes, but marble?
Everything. People, too.
Raoden smacked the broken spot of stone with another rock.
It's all connected somehow, Galadon. The door is linked to Elantris, just as it's linked to Aerilon itself.
But why would the door do this, Sul? Why destroy the city?
Maybe it's not the door. Maybe it's the sudden absence of the door. The magic, the door, was a part of this city. Every stone burned with its own light. When that power was removed, the city was left hollow, like the discarded shell of a small river crawler that has grown too big for its skin. The stones are empty.
How can a stone be empty?
Raoden cracked off another piece of marble, crumbling it between his fingers.
Like this, my friend. The rock spent so long infused by the door that it was weakened irreparably by the Riode. This city really is a corpse. Its spirit has fled.
The discussion was interrupted by the approach of an exhausted Marishe.
My lord, spirit!
What is it? Another attack?
Marishe shook his head, confusion in his eyes.
No. Something different, my lord. We don't know what to make of it. We're being invaded.
By whom?
We think she's a princess.
Raoden crouched on the rooftop, Galadon at his side. The building had been transformed into an observation area to watch the gates for newcomers. From its vantage, he could get a very good look at what was happening in the courtyard. A crowd had gathered atop the Elantris city wall. The gate stood open. That fact was amazing enough. Normally, after newcomers were cast in, the gate was immediately pulled shut, as if the guards were frightened to let it rest open for even a moment. However, in front of the open gate sat a sight even more dumbfounding. A large, horse-drawn cart rested in the middle of the courtyard, a cluster of well-dressed men huddled at its side. Only one person looked unafraid of what she saw before her, a tall woman with long blonde hair. She wore a smooth, full-bodied brown dress with a black scarf tied around her right arm. And she stood with her arm raised to one of the horse's necks, patting the nervous beast. Her sharp face held a set of capable eyes, and she studied the dirty, slime-splattered courtyard with a calculating expression.
I only saw her through Seon. I didn't realize she was so beautiful.
You recognize her, Sul?
I think I'm married to her. That could only be Serene. the daughter of King Evanteo of Teod.
What is she doing here?
More importantly, what is she doing here with a dozen of Aerlon's most influential nobles? The older man near the back is Duke Roile. Some say he's the second most powerful man in the kingdom.
And I assume the young Jindo is Shudan, the baron of K.A. Plantation?
I thought you were a simple farmer.
Shudan's caravan route runs directly through the center of Dula del Sul. There isn't a Dula alive who doesn't know his name.
Counts Ahane and Eondel are there as well. What in Domai's name is that woman planning?
As if in response to Raoden's question, Princess Serini finished her contemplation of Elantris. She turned and walked to the back of the cart, shooing away apprehensive nobles with an intolerant hand. She reached up and whipped the cloth off the back of the cart, revealing its contents. The cart was piled with food.
Galadon, we're in trouble.
Galadon regarded him with a frown. There was hunger in his eyes.
What in Dulican are you blabbering about, Sul? That's food, and my intuition tells me she's going to give it to us. What could be wrong with that?
She must be doing her widow's trial. Only a foreigner would think to come into Elantris.
Sul, tell me what you're thinking.
The timing is wrong, Galadon. Our people are just starting to get a sense of independence. They're beginning to focus on the future and forget their pain. If someone hands them food now, they'll forget everything else. For a short time, they'll be fed, but widow's trials only last a few weeks. After that, it will be back to the pain, the hunger, and the self-pity. My princess out there could destroy everything we've been working for.
You're right. I'd almost forgotten how hungry I was until I saw that food. What?
What happens when Sheor hears about this? Her men will attack the cart like a pack of wolves. There's no telling what kind of damage it would do if one of them killed a count or a baron. My father only suffers Elantris because he doesn't have to think about it. If an Elantrian kills one of his nobles, however, he could very well decide to exterminate the lot of us.
People were appearing in the alleys around the courtyard. None appeared to be Sheor's men. They were the tired, wretched forms of those Elantrians who still lived on their own, wandering through the city like shades. More and more of them had been joining with Raoden, but now, with free food available, he would never get the rest of them. They would continue without thought or purpose, lost in their pain and damnation.
Oh, my lovely princess, you probably mean well, but handing these people food is the worst thing you could do to them.
Marisha waited at the bottom of the stairs.
Did you see her?
We did.
What does she want?
I would speak with the tyrants of this city. The ones who call themselves Aeyndan, Karate, and Sheol. Present yourselves to me.
Oh, remarkably well informed, isn't she?
A little outdated, though.
Marisha, send a runner for Karate. Tell her to meet us at the university.
Yes, my lord.
Oh, and have Seolin bring half of his soldiers and meet us there. He's going to need to keep an eye on Sheor's men.
I could go fetch them myself if my lord wishes.
No. You have to practice being Aeyndan.
Eondel and Shudan both insisted on going with her. Eondel kept one hand on his sword. He usually wore the weapon no matter what Aerilish propriety said about them, and he watched both their guide and their complement of Elantris city guards with equal amounts of suspicion. For their parts, the guards did a fair job of looking nonchalant, as if coming into Elantris were an everyday occurrence. Serini could sense their anxiety, however. Everyone had objected at first. It was unthinkable that she should let herself be lured into the bowels of Elantris to meet with despots. Serini, however, was determined to prove that the city was harmless. She couldn't very well balk at a short trip inside if she wanted to persuade the other nobles to enter the gates.
We're nearly there.
Their guide was a taller man, about the same height as Serini in heels. The gray parts of his skin were a little lighter than those on the other Elantrians she had seen, though she didn't know if that meant that he had been pale-skinned before, or if he had simply been in Elantris a shorter time than the rest. He had an oval face that might have been handsome before the Sheol destroyed it. He wasn't a servant. He walked with too proud a gait. Serini guessed that even though he was acting as a simple messenger, he was one of the trusted minions of an Elantris gang leader.
What is your name?
He belonged to one of three groups who, according to Aishi's resources, ruled the city like warlords and enslave those who were newly cast inside.
They call me Spirit.
A fitting name, Sereni thought, for this man who is so much of a ghost of what he once must have been. They approached a large building that the man, Spirit, informed her used to be Elantris's university. Sereni regarded the building with a critical eye. It was covered with the same odd brownish-green sludge that coated the rest of the city. And while the structure might have once been great, now it was just another ruin. Sereni hesitated as their guide walked into the building. In Sereni's estimation, the upper floor was seriously considering a collapse. She shot Eondel a look. The older man was apprehensive, rubbing his chin in thought. Then he shrugged, giving Sereni a nod.
We've come this far.
So, trying not to think about the sagging ceiling, Sereni led her band of friends and soldiers into the structure. Fortunately, they didn't have to go far. A group of Elantrians stood near the back of the first room, their dark-skinned faces barely visible in the dim light. Two stood on what appeared to be the rubble of a fallen table, raising their heads a few feet above the others.
Eindan
and Karete.
The second form was apparently a woman, though her bald head and wrinkled face were virtually indistinguishable from those of a man.
What do you want of us?
I was led to believe you two were enemies.
We recently realized the benefits of an alliance.
Eindan was a short man with cautious eyes. His small face shriveled like that of a rodent. His pompous, self-important attitude was about what Sereni had expected.
And the man known as Sheor?
One of the aforementioned benefits.
Dead?
Eindan nodded.
We rule Elantris now, princess. What do you want?
Sereni didn't answer immediately. She had been planning to play the three different gang leaders against each other. She would have to present herself differently to a unified enemy.
I want to bribe you.
The woman raised an eyebrow with interest.
What need have we of your bribes, woman?
Sereni had played this game far too often. Eindan used the uninterested front of a man unaccustomed to serious politics. She had met men like him dozens of times while serving in her father's diplomatic corps. And she was very tired of them.
Look, let's be frank. You're obviously not very good at this, and so extended negotiations would be a waste of time. I want to bring food to the people of Elantris, and you're going to resist me because you think it will weaken your hold on them. Right now, you're probably trying to figure out how to control who benefits from my offerings and who doesn't.
The man squirmed uncomfortably, and Sereni smiled.
That is why I'm going to bribe you. What will it take for you to let the people come and get food freely?
Eindan was obviously uncertain how to proceed.
You have a scribe to write down our demands.
I do.
Sereni gestured for Shudin to pull out his paper and charcoal pen. The list was extensive, even larger than Sereni had expected, and it included many odd items. She had assumed they would request weapons, perhaps even gold. Karate's demands, however, began with cloth, moved through various grains, some worked metal sheets, lengths of wood, straw, and ended with oil. The message was clear. Rule of Elantris depended not on force or wealth, but on controlling basic necessities. Sereni agreed to the demands curtly. If she had been dealing with Eindan only, she would have argued for less. But this Karate was a straightforward, unwavering woman. The type who didn't have much patience for haggling.
That will do. For the first few days.
Fine. But I have one rule you have to follow. You can't forbid anyone from coming to the courtyard. Rulers, despots if you wish, but at least let the people suffer with full stomachs.
You have my word. I will keep no one back.
Sereni nodded, motioning that the meeting was finished. Karate assigned a guide to lead them back to the gate, not Spirit this time. He stayed behind, approaching the city's two tyrants as Sereni left the building.
Was that good enough, my lord?
Marisha, that was perfect.
Raoden watched the retreating princess with satisfaction. Marisha smiled modestly.
Ah, well, my lord, I do my best. I haven't much experience with acting. but I do think I played a properly decisive and intimidating leader.
Raoden caught Karate's eye. The gruff woman was trying very hard not to laugh. The pompous artisan had been perfect, neither decisive or intimidating. People outside Elantris saw the city as a lawless realm lorded over by harsh, thieving despots. Together, Marishe and Karate had portrayed exactly what the princess and her companions had expected to see.
She suspected something, Sul.
Yes, but she doesn't know what. Let her suspect that Aendin and Karate are playing tricks on her. It will do no harm.
Galadon shook his head slightly, his bald head shining in the dim light.
What's the point? Why not bring her to the chapel? Let us see what we really are.
I'd like to, Galadon, but we can't afford to let out our secret. The people of Aerilon tolerate Elantris because the Elantrians are so pitiful. If they discover we're establishing a civilized society, their fears will surface. A mass of moaning wretches is one thing, a legion of unkillable monstrosities is another.
Karate nodded, saying nothing. Galadon, the eternal skeptic, simply shook his head, as if unsure what to think.
Well, she certainly is determined, Golo.
Determined indeed. And I don't think she likes me very much.
She thinks you're the lackey of a tyrant. Is she supposed to like you?
True. However, I think we should add a clause to our agreement that says I can attend all of her distributions. I want to keep an eye on our benevolent princess. She doesn't strike me as the type to do anything without several motives. And I wonder just what made her decide to do her trial here in Elantris.
That went well.
Eondel watched their guide disappear back into Elantris.
You got away easily.
The things they demanded can be obtained without much expenditure.
Serini nodded slightly, rubbing her fingers along the cart's wooden side.
I just hate to deal with people like that.
Perhaps you judge them too harshly. They seemed less like tyrants and more like people trying to make the best of a very difficult life.
You should hear some of the stories Eishi told me, Shuden. The gods say that when new Elantrians are thrown into the city, the gangs descend on them like sharks. What few resources enter this city go to the gang leaders, and they keep the rest of the people in a state of near starvation.
Shuden raised an eyebrow, looking over at the Elantris city guards, the source of Serini's information. The group leaned lazily on their spears, watching with uninterested eyes as the nobleman began unloading the cart.
All right.
Serini climbed into the cart and handed Shuden a box of vegetables.
Perhaps they aren't the most reliable source, but we have proof in front of us.
Serini swept her arm toward the emaciated forms that clustered in the side streets.
Look at the hollow in their eyes and apprehensive steps. These are people who live in fear, Shuden. I've seen it before in Fjordan, Hrovel, and a half dozen other places. I know what an oppressed people looks like.
True, but the leaders didn't look much better to me. Perhaps they aren't oppressive, just equally oppressed.
Perhaps.
My lady, I wish you would step back and let us move those boxes. It just isn't proper.
I'll be fine, Eondel.
Serini handed Eondel a box.
There's a reason I didn't bring any servants. I want us all to take part. That includes you, my lord.
Serini nodded to Ahane, who had found a shaded spot near the gate to rest. Ahane rose and waddled out into the sunlight. The day had turned remarkably hot for one so early in the spring, and the sun was blazing overhead, though even its heat hadn't been able to dry out the omnipresent Elantris muck.
I hope you appreciate my sacrifice, Serini. This slime is absolutely ruining my cloak.
Serves you right.
Serini handed the Count a box of boiled potatoes.
I told you to wear something inexpensive.
I don't have anything inexpensive, my dear.
You mean to tell me you actually paid money for that robe you wore to Neodin's wedding? I wasn't even aware that shade of orange existed, Ahane?
The Count scowled, lugging his box to the front of the cart. Serini didn't hand Roile a box, nor did he move to receive one. It had been big news in the court a few days before, when someone had noticed the Duke walking with a limp. Rumors claimed he had fallen one morning while climbing out of bed. Roile's spry attitude sometimes made it difficult to remember that he was, in fact, a very old man. Serini got into a rhythm, giving out boxes as hands appeared to take them, which is why she didn't notice at first that a new figure had joined the others. Nearing the final few boxes, she happened to look up at the man accepting the load. She nearly dropped the box in shock as she recognized his face.
You!
The Elantrian known as Spirit smiled, taking the box out of her stunned fingers.
I was wondering how long it would take you to realize I was here.
How long?
Oh, about 10 minutes now. I arrived just after you began unloading.
Spirit took the box away, stacking it with the others. Serini stood in muted stupefaction on the back of the cart. She must have mistaken his dark hands for Shuden's brown ones. Serini realized with a start that Iondel was waiting for a box.
Why is he here?
He claims that his master ordered him to watch the distribution. Apparently, Aeyndin trusts you about as much as you trust him.
Serini delivered the last two boxes, then hopped down from the back of the cart. She hit the cobblestones at a wrong angle, however, and slipped in the muck. Fortunately, a pair of hands caught her and pulled her upright.
Be careful. Walking in Elantris takes a little getting used to.
Serini pulled her arms out of his helpful grasp.
Thank you.
Spirit raised an eyebrow, then moved to stand next to the Aerilish lords. Serini rubbed her elbow where Spirit had caught her. Something about his touch seemed oddly tender. She shook her head to dispel such imaginings. More important things demanded her attention. The Elantrians were not approaching. There were more of them now, perhaps 50, clustered hesitantly and bird-like in the shadows. Some were obviously children, but most were of the same indeterminable age. Their wrinkled Elantrian skin made them all look as old as Roile. None approached the food.
Why aren't they coming?
They're scared and disbelieving. This much food must seem like an illusion, a devilish trick their minds have surely played on them hundreds of times.
His words were not those of a despotic warlord. Spirit reached down and selected a turnip from one of the carts. He held it lightly, staring at it as if he himself were unsure of its reality. There was a ravenousness in his eyes, the hunger of a man who hadn't seen a good meal in weeks. Serini realized that this man was as famished as the rest of them, despite his favored rank. And he had patiently helped unload dozens of boxes filled with food. Spirit finally lifted the turnip and took a bite. Serini could imagine how it must taste, raw and bitter. Yet reflected in his eyes, it seemed a feast. Spirit's acceptance of the food seemed to give approval to the others, for the mass of people surged forward. The Elantris city guards finally perked up, and they quickly surrounded Serini and the others, their long spears held out threateningly.
Leave a space here before the boxes.
The guards parted, allowing Elantrians to approach a few at a time. Serini and the lords stood behind the boxes, distributing food to the wary supplicants. Even Aeyndin stopped griping as he got into the work, doling out food in solemn silence. Serini saw him give a bag to what must have been a little girl. Though her head was bald and her lips creased with wrinkles, the girl smiled with an incongruous innocence, then scampered away. Aeyndin paused for a moment before continuing his labor.
It's working.
If she could touch Aeyndin, then she might be able to do the same for the rest of the court. As she worked, Serini noticed the man's spirit standing near the back of the crowd. His hand was raised thoughtfully to his chin as he studied her. He seemed worried. But why? What had he to be worried about? It was then, staring into his eyes, that Serini knew the truth. This was no lackey. He was the leader, and for some reason, he felt he needed to hide that fact from her. So, Serini did what she always did when she learned that someone was keeping things from her. She tried to find out what they were.